Greetings to all across the multiverse. Welcome to the show. I am your host, the Magic Man Sam, broadcasting from the Cloud Post, and you are listening to Magic People, a podcast that goes behind the cardboard and talks with the humans that love this wonderful game. You know, I've been listening to podcasts since last fall. I was turned onto the format by a friend, and I realized just how rewarding it is to simply listen to a couple of folks sit down and have a chat. I think I've always been a fan of radio, and the popularity of podcasts are somewhat the radio revival. It's nice because the format demands a little bit less from you. It's not video, which requires you to sit and watch. You can listen while you cook, while you run, which is what I do, and it stimulates a place in your brain that feels connected to imagination. Anyway, I've been a big fan of podcasts, like I said, and I finally decided to launch my own. I had a revelation in the car a couple of weeks ago listening to another podcast. I mean, imagine that. That, as far as I know, there isn't an MTG podcast out there that focuses on the people of magic, right? There are tons and tons of podcasts that concentrate on the cards, the formats, the flavor, but somehow there's no podcast devoted to interviewing the folks that play the game. I've always been a conversationalist myself, always been fascinated by interviews, so it was like Revelark descended from the skies and said, Sam, you need to do it. So here we are, the first episode of Magic People. I'm quite excited to bring you a high-quality interview-style podcast that relates to magic, life, and everything in between. And without further ado, it is time to get to the podcast itself. The interview today is with the Tolarian Community College, the professor specifically, who has generously given his time to me. And I think we had a really good talk. We talked about just sort of his origins with the game, where his YouTube channel came from. We get into politics. We get into bullying. We get into a lot of social stuff that surrounds Magic the Gathering. I mean, we talk about his family, too. So I think we're in for a perfect start to this series. So I hope you guys enjoy. Of course, he needs no introduction. If you don't know who the professor from the Tolarian Community College is, you are living under a rock, and I'm not talking about black-green stuff. I would be very, very hard-pressed to find someone that doesn't know who he is for now. So, hey, let's talk to him. So, hello, Professor. Where are you in the world right now?
I'm at Tolaria East. No, wait. I'm in the West Bay. I'm in San Francisco Bay Area, California, United States is where I reside.
Nice. Excellent. And I'm always so jealous of people from California because of the weather, although you are in kind of the murky and sort of cloudy area of California, so...
Which is the best weather. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and if anybody ever says sunny LA and beautiful weather, they obviously don't know what they're talking about, because Los Angeles is just the most atrocious weather there is. It's hot, it's miserable, it's cement and sunshine, just the worst. And so I love Bay Area weather. I just absolutely adore it. I like to dress in layers, as you may know. And there's nothing more wonderful than cold, windy, foggy, rainy, or just chill weather. So I love Bay Area weather like you wouldn't believe. It's my favorite weather in the world.
Man, that's coming from someone who comes from LA. So maybe the heat just beat it out of you for your entire upbringing.
They were miserable summers. They were miserable summers growing up.
Now, were you wearing a tie and a suit as a child too in Los Angeles?
I was in high school, and I sure got. Actually, no, I started in middle school with a tie. Boy, did I get a lot of crap for that! I really got picked on and attacked emotionally and a few times physically because I was determined to set myself apart from the other students by manner of my dress. And so I rebelled against a world of people wearing t-shirts and jeans by wearing a shirt and tie. If I was born in the 40s, I'd be the kid in the shirt and jeans back when everybody had to wear a tie. Like, even back then, you had to wear, like, a tie to high school, and it was considered, you know, uncouth or whatever if you didn't. I don't do it out of anything other than rebellion, and that's pretty much why I still do it today, is it's my form of rebellion.
Yeah, and it's really nice and eclectic, too. I mean, you have quite the color combinations. There are a few videos that I've seen that that match the tone and whatnot. If we're talking about vampires, it seems like you match it real nice with, like, a deep red tie and, like, a black shirt. It always looks slick.
I enjoy that. Thank you. I do enjoy doing that.
Yeah, it's part of the image, too. I mean, as YouTubers, I feel like we sort of become cartoon characters in a way. And part of that is becoming iconic in your image and your appearance and your delivery and your speech and all those things. So I'd be hard pressed to find someone, if I told them like, hey, would you just draw the professor? I'm sure the first thing they would do is put on a tie for you and make you look spiffy. So,
well, I love it. I love it. And that is kind of neat, having an image associated with you.
Yeah, it's good. And it's a good image too. I mean, it's really professional, and being well-dressed always just feels good, right? The motto is look good, feel good, play good, right?
I don't know that I've heard that before, but I agree with it. Again, for me, I more like it being different. I would never say – I would never want to look at how someone else is dressed in any type of a judgment way. I don't have a philosophy of like, you should be dressed up or anything like that. Again, like ever. For me, it's about just – whatever makes you happy, whatever makes you comfortable. But when I see everyone going one direction, I'm always going to be the person going the opposite direction. It's true in magic too. Like, I always am drawn towards the decks with less attention, that have less hope of winning, perhaps. I like going a different way. Whenever anybody gets excited about one thing, I always look towards what isn't getting attention, and that's always been a draw for me my whole life in everything, in the shows I like, in the things that I do. I've always liked to try and go opposite of a crowd if I see a crowd.
Right, yeah, and I think that has manifested a few times in magic. In the of course, we've talked about Commander through Twitter. The professor plays Sig Riverguide as well as a sapling of Colfinor. And if you don't know those names, that's because you shouldn't know those names, because that's the professor's motto, right? But we'll get to those guys in a minute. So you mentioned you were spiffy in middle school. Is that kind of when magic came about, or was that later?
I got involved in magic in high school.
Okay.
I would have probably benefited from it greatly in middle school, but in middle school, I did not really have any hobbies or activities like that. I was kind of focused on my studies,
okay,
as they were. I was very interested in animal biology. My goal was to be an animal biologist. This was before I fell out of the sciences and into an English major. And so my whole life, the direction had been animal biology. And so I was very obsessed with animals, and that was kind of middle school. And right around the time that it became clear to me I wasn't going to cut it as a scientist is when I found Magic the Gathering, which was in high school. And it provided a very nice – I don't know that it was exactly a social group, because we were still very distant. But it was something – just a taste of something I didn't have in my life at all, which was connections with other human beings, interactions, shared interests. It was the start of what would develop into a social life and a self-realization and things like that. And so that was in high school. I think 10th grade, which was revised, Fallen Empires, Antiquities had just finished up. That's what was going on.
Wow. So that's a perfect turning point, I think, at least in my experience in high school, and teaching high school here and there as a substitute nowadays, and being around a lot of high schoolers through my summer jobs. I feel like sophomore year, 10th grade, is always like, at least for the people that are blooming early, that's when they start getting into trouble, right? They start like experimenting with drugs and et cetera, et cetera. And so to have something like magic kind of keep you in the right direction and keep you focused on better things, I think that couldn't have come at a more perfect time. Of course, you talked about middle school. You know, I think every magic player wishes they had it in their life sooner than when it came. But I think 10th grade is such a pivotal moment. So what else are you – I mean, that brought you the social aspect. What else – did you have any other hobbies, or did that just kind of take over?
That kind of took over. It was also around the time I became an avid reader.
Oh, cool.
And I had not been very – I was, I guess, functionally literate in that I could read and write. But I never spent my free time when I was young, like preteen or early teens. I didn't sit around on a day with a book at all. And it really was at that time that I discovered – fantasy science fiction novels, and I dove into them like diving into a giant body of water, and I spent every minute that I wasn't playing Magic in high school, which was actually a good amount because it was a lot harder in those days, especially when you were young, to get games. It's today I feel, and I know this isn't true of everyone, of course, but I feel like there's a lot more options and enabling situations where you can play Magic. And I felt like I really never had any time or ability or, you know, to play the game except just at lunch with other kids and a friend or two that I had that also played when I very rarely saw them, like over the summer.
Sure.
We'd get some games. So I was reading, and I just lined the books up on my bookshelf like trophies, because to me, accomplishing each of those books felt really good, because I was someone who didn't have a very high self-esteem, and having an accomplishment of any form, just I really did like them like little trophies, and I just went through books so quick. I read Terry Brooks and Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman, and later on discovered Connie Willis and Octavia Butler, and just, you know, going through a lot of the sci-fi fantasy that was being published at the time and maturing along with it. And that was really what I did, was read. And that's how I decided I wanted to write as well, and got involved in English as a career change at the age of 16, as it were.
Wow. Okay. So there are a couple of things that are really like the idea of putting books on a shelf and having them as sort of trophies. I feel, one, it's really nice to just read a book because it's tactile, especially nowadays. You know, everything comes through a screen. And so I purposefully go out and buy the paperback book so I have it and I can highlight it and bend the pages and, you know, put little dog-eared pages here and there, my favorite parts. And then that moment of that triumph of, ha, I did this. Here's the proof, you know. And it's really cool. At least through your videos, we see all the books. I'm always trying to see the titles of the books on the spines and behind you in all of your videos. Like, oh, what the professor's reading? What has he read? And so it's really cool to have that. And I think that sort of feeling can manifest in Magic the same way, at least for deck builders like me, right? You can buy all the cards and then you can refine the deck. And then once you have the deck complete, it's really nice to put it in a box and say, haha, there it is, you know? And the tactile aspect, of course, too, is something that, you know, has roots in older times, I guess. It's, Magic isn't digital unless you're playing Mitgo, but something satisfying about holding something real in paper.
I agree with that. I do also try not to be a technophobe, and I do kind of, again, this is me being a rebel, but I hear, especially as a professor of English, my colleagues are very technophobic and very anti-technology in all its forms. Half of them can barely send an email. When I receive emails from, you know, some of my colleagues, it often says, like, first name, last name, like literally the words first name, the word first name, where they have not filled in that field.
Oh, geez.
And they don't, and I do not consider that something that they should be proud of, because as people in academia, we should be embracing information, and technology is part of that. And I do agree with you 100%, Sam, that, you know, having that tactile book in my hand is, for me, preferable. But as I say to my students, I don't care how you read. I just care that you read.
Right,
and
sure.
So, you know, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Get it on your e-reader, you know, on your Kindle or your tablet or whatever it is. I've had a few use their phones and it's like, I don't know how you can manage on that, but whatever, as long as you're reading it, that's my main concern. And when, I don't know if you've seen the photo, it makes the rounds on Reddit from time to time, but it shows an old black and white photo from the 1940s, and it's a packed train and everybody on the train is holding a newspaper. And then it's a picture from today and it's a train or a bus and it's packed and everybody's holding a tablet. And it says, what exactly is the problem? And I couldn't agree with that sentiment more, because in a lot of ways, it's possible that tablets are going to save newspapers,
right,
and
sure,
magazines and publishing. People are becoming more informed. Studies are showing that people who get their news through a lot of internet sources are actually much more likely to be properly informed on the issues than someone who just tunes into the 7 o'clock news every night and hears whatever that stuff is. So I don't try and take, you know, an attitude of like, well, I wish people didn't use tablets or anything like that. But I do love books, and my dream is to one day have an actual, you know, that scene you see in my YouTube videos is literally, it ends where the camera ends. We don't have a lot of space, and one day I really dream of having just an entire room filled with shelves on every wall from floor to ceiling, and just filled with all of our books. So many of them are in storage, unfortunately, because we're currently in very, very small housing situation, and we just don't have the room to set that up. But the dream, knowing that I've arrived, will be having like my own little study or library that really is just filled with books. And I love books. I love the feel of books, the smell of books, and I personally do. But I also love that people are reading because of these advancements in technology. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, it doesn't matter how it gets to somebody, as long as it gets to somebody. And like you said, I mean, just the power of information exchange, especially in a country like ours, it's really relieving to be able to have access to so many different opinions and sides, and you kind of get to pick and choose what you like to believe. I mean, the fact that censorship still exists in other countries, especially through the internet and sources like that, is mind-boggling and infuriating. So, I mean, I feel very, very grateful to be able to pull up the interwebs and access any sort of a bias or unbiased or objective, subjective article I wish. But what you said about the library, that's cool. We might have to make a new card now, Tolaria Library, right? And, you know, the Library of Alexandria. Now it's the Library of Tolaria. So
I will absolutely do that if my wife and I ever manage to move to a larger place where I'm able to set that up. I will absolutely call it that.
That's so good. Yeah. I mean, San Francisco is a bit of a – I feel like that's everyone's experience in San Francisco. It's sort of like the New York of the West in a way, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's cramped living, but it's also really gorgeous living, and that's kind of the payback, right?
Yes, that's it exactly, and it's not one of those areas where it's easy to just buy a house with a yard. It's not even really available. There's some outlying areas that people kind of migrate to as they get older sometimes, and that's definitely on the radar. But it's not an easy place to have that kind of typical suburban American dream of like that large 5-bedroom house with a giant yard you're riding a mower on. That doesn't exist in the Bay Area at all. It's a real housing crisis, in
yeah,
fact.
You guys are the rebels of the West, right? We left that American dream in Kansas, so it's it's a different lifestyle, but it's a good one. I really like that you've alluded to your wife and your child and your professional life, because we're busybodies as humans, and especially with eclectic interests like magic and reading. I mean, how does it all balance? Like, how does magic fit into your personal life with those things?
It's been a wonderful thing in my personal life, actually, because I got back into magic long after I was married, and I've been with my wife, gosh, this is going on our 16th year together.
Wow, congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah, we met in an English class, and
that's fitting.
Yes, yes. She came up to me and told me how wrong I was about my interpretation of the novel, and I knew she was smart. I'm very attracted to smart, so that was love at first sight for me.
See, kids, you have to stay in English class. That's where you find your soulmate. So
yes, she always uses that in her. She's a professor as well. When she does group work, she always says, "Hey, I met my husband doing group work in a college class. So even if you feel it's completely worthless, maybe you'll actually meet someone that you like."
Yeah, exactly.
But I got back into it around, I think it was right before Innistrad Block came out.
Okay.
And that was when I got back into the game. And my wife and I had already been together. Well, how long ago was Innistrad? I guess we'd been together about 11 or 12 years at that point, 10 years, something like that. And she had never played in high school was the difference. I had and she hadn't. But she got into it fast because I married a nerd. And she's a major video game player. She largely Squaresoft games, the Final Fantasy ones. Like plays them from start to finish and starts over again. And so she's familiar with that fantasy world and the setup. And I think that helps with magic a lot. Like, you know, she instantly understood things like power and toughness and attack phase because she's playing you know, Final Fantasy her whole life. And so she can handle those concepts, you know, like they're very natural to her. And so there, I don't even remember a period of her having any difficulty with understanding the basics of the game. As I recall, I just kind of sat down, showed it to her, and we both kind of, I was relearning as well. It had been a long time. And we both kind of re-entered this world together at the same time, and we experience it more or less together since then. We play together, we combined our collections. I don't have a distinct collection from hers, which was very hard because we had been married for 7 years and everything was shared, our checking account, our bills, all the property, and yet I was very reluctant to actually combine our collections once we got going. And it was like, wow, no, I kind of want my own card.
Sure.
And then when we were both trying to get play sets of the same card, I realized how absurd it was. And so we combined our collections and we have one shared household collection and such. So sometimes when you see me bringing out cards in videos, they're cards that she acquired that entered into the collection through her. That's one way that makes it easier, two people working towards one collection.
Right. I mean you have one human child, but you have about 26, you know, 100 or 1,000, I'm not sure your size, your collection, cardboard children.
It's big. And yes, I do, as also viewers of my channel know, take exceedingly neurotic care of them.
Sure.
I like them to always look pack fresh. I'm the person complaining that near mint isn't good enough. I need it at near mint plus minimum for my cards, and so that's why I double sleeve and just frantically always keep everything, you know, as clean and isolated from any type of damage as possible.
Of course. And now, I know you've advocated before about teaching children magic and the importance of magic in a child's life. I'm kind of thinking back to what you said at the beginning about growing up and how magic helped you with a lot of things, especially the social aspect. And so now you have a unique opportunity, I think, which I don't have yet. Obviously, I don't have a kid. And, you know, there are some parents out there that do play magic that are having children now. And it's really, really cool to see a game last this long to have a new generation. You've talked about just the importance of that. So, like, I don't know, kind of elaborate that with your kid in mind.
Well, I look forward to him thoroughly whooping my ass at magic someday, because that's, of course, how it's going to go. Magic is a game where the younger you are and the faster your brain is, you're probably going to do better at it. It's like a sport. I mean, a younger athlete is typically going to be able to run faster than someone in his late 40s, right? Even if that person's been training his or her own life. And I think magic is that way. I've seen people, there's people at my local game store who bring their kids, young kids, and I mean like young kids, in with them, and their young kids aren't the ones struggling with the game. It's 49-year-old dad who's still, you know, fumbling as he goes to his attack step a little bit, you know, while his 9-year-old rolls his eyes. And I look forward to that because I think that, like I've said in a few of my videos, it is a stimulating game intellectually, both creatively and critically, and mathematical skills and strategy, and even just the imagination of the worlds and even thinking ahead. I mean, it just stimulates everything. It covers everything. So I can think of a lot worse things. Yes, there's some negatives to it. People can get overly obsessed. And, you know, you talked a lot. I loved your video about some of the issues with magic that are not so great, and I agreed on every single point, but there's worse things that he could be doing with his life and his time, especially in the teen years or preteen years, than sitting around a card shop playing magic. There's a lot worse things out there.
Absolutely.
And I say that in our local game store when sometimes a parent comes in asking about the game and saying they're not sure. And I say, look around here. I say, how many people in here are teachers? And several other people raise their hands. I say, how many other people in here are computer programmers? And that's most of the rest of the room. I'm like, this guy over here is a lawyer. And then there's some young adults in there as well. And I say, there's a lot of worse things for your son or daughter to be spending their afternoons in here thinking about numbers and imagining different worlds with people who have all gone to college, and or even those that do. We've got a carpenter and other people who are in the skilled trades, which are incredibly, incredibly dependent on you mastering how to do stuff. I could never, do any carpentry or anything like that. And it takes so many years of training and dedication. It's all positive. And I say that sometimes to parents coming in, and it's absolutely how I feel about my son. He'll probably hate it and want to play sports.
Yeah. What if he
like
rebels
that
against you the same way you've rebelled against everything your whole life?
I will support him, whatever his rebellion is, as long as, of course, he's not hurting himself or others, obviously. But, I don't think my job as parent is to judge his hobbies and to say, fishing, what a boring way to spend your afternoon. If he loves fishing, I will drive him down to every lake in town and out of town before he knows how to drive. I will make sure to learn about the right fishing equipment to buy him for presents on his birthday and holidays and special occasions and things like that, even if I think it's particularly dull, because that's what he loves. And my job will be to encourage that love of the world in which he lives.
So you're saying we might see a new YouTube channel with fishing gear and the accessories and the quality of that. Is that what we're saying?
If he gets into fishing, I guess we'll see. Right.
How old is your son?
He's a year and a half, so excellent. We've got a while before we'll know.
Okay. Sure. I mean, if you could call it right now, what guild do you think your son would belong to?
All year and a half year olds are in gruel. All year and a half year olds are in gruel. Ask any parent. You are not in the Azurius Senate when you're a year and a half. I'm sorry. You are a rampaging warrior beast thing.
Sure. Crawling on all fours, yeah. Even too.
Oh gosh. Gruel all the way. Gruel all the way. We would joke when my wife actually was playing at the game shop all throughout her pregnancy. She won her first game day while I think like 7.5 months pregnant.
Now that is a keeper,
so,
right there.
Oh yeah. And so there was a lot of jokes like some people were saying, like, so is your kid's mechanic going to be Unleash or Populate when he's born? And it was really nice. A very supportive community. Everybody gets to know you. A lot of people joke that when you go down to a local game store repeatedly, it's like Cheers without the alcohol.
Sure, exactly.
And it's great. Although ours has some alcohol at night. Excuse me. I should not be saying that on the air.
We haven't named it yet.
Without the alcohol. That's right. No. Yeah.
I like what you said a lot about being around the game store, the community aspect of Magic, something that I touched on, but I really do appreciate about the game, because it does bring people together. And one of my favorite things in life is being surrounded by a bunch of people that, if it weren't for the common denominator that we're currently facing, for example, Magic in a Magic store, most of these people would not be in the same room. And that's where you learn the best life lessons. That's where you learn so much about everyone and everything in the world, is by being around people that you never would be if it weren't for XYZ, in this case, Magic. And there's that proverb, right? You become who you surround yourself with. And I'm thinking about, even in the community, like what you said, all of the wonderful professions that you see across the board with the people that go to your store. I'm thinking about pro tours and professional Magic players too. I mean, those people are aspiring role models. A lot of them do exactly what you were saying, computer programming. They're brilliant people.
Oh,
and there's,
yes,
something to aspire to. So if you have a role model that's a Magic player, then chances are, based on who is playing right now, that you're looking up to somebody that is very successful and very is just a good role model. So to have that as a child and to have that as a growing adult, I think that's really powerful. You know, obviously we could list off a bunch of other people that are not nearly as they're not the people you want to aspire to be, but in the Magic community, that's, I feel, very rare.
Absolutely. And, I mean, that happens too, on the pro level, where a lot of people were not looking to get into Magic to be a role model, and suddenly they're catapulted into the spotlight, and they're 20 years old or 23 years old, and they've been playing this game and doing so successfully, and suddenly they get that celebrity curse where their actions are judged very much under the microscope.
Sure.
And that goes on a lot as well.
Yeah, that is true. That is always an aspect of being, in the celebrity spotlight and the status. Luckily, I mean, there have been a few cases of cheaters here and there, like we've seen across the board, but I feel, I'm just thinking of people like Louis Scott Vargas, even Nate Holt, who hosts Walk the Plains, I think is just a good person to look up to in a lot of ways, you know? So, and especially in folks like you who are, humble, just families with kids and are teaching the right values to the right people, the right time with the right game, which is magic. So that's very aspiring.
Yeah, yeah. I really think that we're entering an interesting era where many aspects of nerd culture are being reevaluated as it becomes much more mainstream as we all grow up and become that target demographic, that which was dismissed perhaps by the generation before us as being kids stuff is being seen not only to not be kids stuff, but also to have a lot of positive aspects to it. And I think that it's really interesting to watch popular shows that will now portray a stereotypical nerd as being someone who has a lot of money.
Right, sure.
Isn't that interesting? Like, think back to when you were, you know, like 8 years old, 10 years old, and they'd have the nerd character. That was not a character typically that you would want to aspire to be. They needed to learn the lesson, didn't they? They needed to learn the lesson to stop being such a brainiac and just dance and enjoy the music or whatever. And now it's turning out that a lot of those people that weren't the brainiacs are having trouble finding gainful employment, or ran into drug problems. As many of us who have spent hours on Facebook looking up the people from junior high and high school and how they turned out. It turns out some of the cool kids didn't necessarily end up with such cool futures. And it's interesting to see the popular media start to reflect some of those issues where it's like, hey, actually, maybe you should pick up a book from time to time. Actually, you know, Hermione is a very admirable character here. And Harry and Ron could learn a few things from her. And people will say that she's actually kick ass in her intelligence, that she's not the one who's stuck up and needs to learn a lesson, but rather that she's just amazing and remarkable in what we aspire towards. And I love seeing that sort of thing as we grow up, as I enter into actually thinking of myself as an adult and seeing that so many people actually do share my interests and philosophies and the jokes are about our type of humor and video game humor. And it's amazing to see video game humor in popular commercials and things. And my ringtone goes off in class and everybody recognizes the Zelda theme.
Good.
And things like that.
It's a great ringtone there, geez.
Of course, they're shocked that, like, they're shocked that I play video games.
Right.
There's still some prejudices. Ageism is real. No, but sure. I'm not that old.
No, but not yes. That old. No.
Yes, yes.
It is cool. I mean, to hint on what you said earlier, think about the richest man in the world. He's not a boxer. He's not a fighter. You know, he's not a football player. He is a computer programmer, and that is, you know, Bill Gates, one of the richest men in the world. So the tables have turned, like you said. And isn't it cool that Emma Watson has sort of transcended her role as Hermione and become such an activist and a feminist and a very powerful, like, intelligent, well-kept, just human and especially female role model? I think that's just really cool.
Absolutely. And I really hope that in that area, we continue to see more role models specifically within Magic the Gathering, because the gender disparity that exists is probably one of the most troubling things to me about the community. And it's not something necessarily that's coming from the community entirely, but it is something about the community that's very off-putting, which is just simply that it is so dominated by male players.
Right. Right. Yeah. I've written a couple of videos about that, especially titled like Misogyny in Magic. And I'm interested to hear kind of the other side of the story, just coming from female, you know, Magic the Gathering players. So I'll be excited to explore that. But for now, we should talk more about just the channel as we kind of segue into the final little subjects. So obviously, you got hooked on Magic again with your wife, and it was being nurtured in the household, which is really cool. So what made the next step? Did you have interest in film or in videos, or were you just more interested in sort of getting the word out there, like, hey, you should buy these sleeves and not those sleeves? Or what kind of lit the flame under the Tolarian Community College?
It was very unexpected the way it happened. And while I definitely had, like I said, being very pro technology and being a big fan of the fact that with the internet, unlike conventional television, where you cannot have your own TV show, easily anyway. I mean, it's you can't respond to watching The Big Bang Theory by doing your own television show on network TV as a rebuttal. But on YouTube, if you want to do your own show, podcast, whatever, you can put message board, blog, you can put information out just as much as people can. It's a two-way medium, and I love that. I think that's such a positive thing. I hope it completely replaces television. So I always wanted to get involved, but I never really knew how, and it was not on my mind when I made my first video. I really was just getting sick of the fact that there was no definitive criticism of Magic the Gathering accessories, in particular sleeves, out there, and I decided, you know what, I knew this stuff because, like I said, I'm neurotic about my cards, and I had bought every sleeve that was at my local game store twice, and in addition to that, spoken to everybody at the store, been on the message boards. I don't know if the archives go this far back, but you could probably find message posts from me from, you know, 5 years ago with frantic, constant, tedious posts about, like, Ultra Pro sleeves and Dragon Shield sleeves, and what do you think of this? And what I noticed in doing those posts was people did not have any idea. Somebody would say, oh, I use Ultra Pros, they're fine for me. And it's like, well, that's not really what I'm looking for, is how do they compare and contrast in a thorough evaluation to another sleeve? And nobody had that, and on the rare occasion that someone did do something like that, it was buried on the internet, because those message boards, 3 years pass, 3 months pass, and that message is long gone at the bottom of the thread. And so I thought, I'm going to film this visual guide that will be there so that whenever anybody asks which is better, Dragon Shield or Ultra Pro, they can just point like to a picture, almost, only a video. And that was where the first video came about, and it was all I intended to do, was that first video. And yeah. And it didn't make a big resonance at first. It didn't have a big hit. I almost didn't publish it. When I was done with it, I was very nervous about actually publishing it. And a friendly acquaintance of mine at my local game store, I kind of showed it to some of the people at the game store. It was unlisted. And he was like, this is awesome. You absolutely need to publish it and post it in the groups and stuff like that. He says, if you don't, I will. I'm like, no, I'll do it. And so he kind of gave me a nice kick in the right direction. And I'm grateful that he had. And that was where the first video came from. But I never had any intention of continuing it beyond that. It just kind of evolved from, oh, can you also do one more video about this? To me being like, oh, I also have one more thought that I wish I had put in that last video. Let me add an extra to, I want to see what it's like to do a video like this. And bit by bit, video by video, very erratically by erratically, this kind of regular channel evolved. And eventually, there was a day where it kind of ignited. I think a Reddit thread or something kind of took it up there, and it got way more attention than it had been getting. And that's when I started considering pursuing it much more seriously and also regularly, to be uploading regularly and producing regularly. And at a certain point, I just resigned myself to, I am going to have to buy one of everything that is available on the market, no matter what, and test it out and make a video about it. And I feel like I've come pretty darn close at this point.
You definitely have quite the back catalog. And you're right, it does snowball out of nowhere. Any of the videos can catch fire. And I feel like a phenomena of YouTube is everything sort of hits this critical mass that once you have X amount of subscribers, then it's just a sort of eventual, the snowball will start rolling downhill instead of uphill. You don't have to push it anymore. It just sort of evolves for itself because word of mouth and people start sharing the videos, and then you explode. So actually what I did when I started YouTube was I hid the number of subscribers. Like, you weren't able to see how many people were subscribed to my channel, because human nature is you're less likely going to subscribe to the channel if it has 200 people versus 200,000 people. The same that if you're going to a restaurant, you're less likely going to sit in the restaurant that has one person in it. You're going to want to wait in line for the one that has 1,000 people in it.
That's very true.
You know, so now you're at the point that this channel is so big that it's just going to keep getting bigger inevitably just by the power of numbers and followers and support. So so now that it is huge, what keeps it going? Like, what are the inspirations here now?
I think that one of the big inspirations I have, I don't know if this is going to sound silly, but is actually Roger Ebert.
Excellent. Okay.
I'm a big Ebert buff. I would read, actually read the reviews that he did for each movie, in addition to watching Siskel and Ebert and later Ebert and Roper at the movies. But I would read his reviews, and I was always very impressed with his intelligence and the manner of his criticism in what might be often considered to be, you know, I know that there's a lot of highbrow or respected cinematography, but typically movies, you know, especially if they're comedic films or things like that, or science fiction, sadly, might not be taken with the gravitas that other types of artistic expression receive. And he approached everything in a way that I really admired. I thought he had a great wit, but also just a very deep intellect about him, and I use him as a model when I'm doing any of my videos that are critiques. I always say to myself, I'm Roger Ebert, and I've even said that in talking with some manufacturers of the products that I review. Sometimes in emails, a couple people have been very upset about the negative review, and I've said, you know, my mom watched Siskel and Ebert, and she always did the opposite of what Ebert did because she knew that her taste was the opposite of his. So, you know, just because I say this isn't good doesn't mean everyone's going to agree. And that's something to keep in mind. And disagreement and debate is absolutely welcome on any of my videos. I try and explain where my ideas come from as the goal. And I would never, ever want anyone to think or feel that I would ever be presenting my evaluation as the evaluation, but rather a evaluation, and I want to show my work. I want to show evidence for what I am claiming. But beyond that, it's up to you, and I hope to show visually every angle, every test I can think of, chat about it as much as possible, and then you got to determine what's best for you and your needs, and disagree 100% with me all you want, and that's great. That's a good thing. I just want to show my work, where it came from. If I say this is a B, I want to try and indicate why I said that. If I say this is a do not buy, I want to show you specifically. I don't want to just say, this is crap.
Exactly.
On. And it's like, well, why do you think that?
Right.
I want to show the why. And so that's my large inspiration. But also to foster that more intelligent debate and discussion, I think there's a weird trend in magic towards this kind of, like, I don't want to call it, I don't even know if this is accurate, but kind of a punk attitude.
Okay.
That I see sometimes, where it's people who maybe and maybe this is just things that, like, some of the larger companies put out, like, you know, Star City Games and Channel Fireball, but sometimes I watch their ads and they seem to be promoting a culture of, like, destroy your enemy.
Badassery,
like,
right?
And I don't care how anybody dresses, but they are choosing to show someone maybe who has got, you know, like, the ball cap on and, like, a really slouchy shirt. And I don't have any problem with anybody dressing that way, but when they're putting that up on the pedestal, and I'm like, oh, is that the premise that they're going for sometimes? And yeah, badassery, like you say. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm all for confidence, and I'm all for, you know, like finding your own. But I do wish that there was a little bit more of, like, well, let's sit down and talk about
this. Sure,
sure. And I love to see more of that. And so I want to always, you know, promote that. And early on, I was worried my videos were too long because I do have a bit of a mouth on me, as people know.
Any professor would say, yeah. So, you know.
Well, it goes well in my line of work because I've got 2 hour plus worth of lectures for each class that need to be filled, and I'm not reading off of cue cards, so I need to be able to talk. But early on, I started asking subscribers, is this too long? Should I be shooting for that ideal? You know, they say the ideal YouTube video is 4 minutes. 4 minutes. And I'm like, oh God, I got 14 minutes on card sleeves. Am I out of my mind? And everybody, just about, overwhelmingly, and it was my first really good feeling too,
cool,
was they said, relax, like, we love it. Do it just what you're doing. Keep, we want to hear more. And I said, all right, I'm going to do that. I'm going to be the guy with the 10-minute plus videos, and not on purpose. I've got some 4-minute ones, and I've decided also as a rule, my videos are as long as they need to be for whatever it is I'm talking about, and I'll never cut anything out of a video because I feel that the video itself is too long of a runtime. If I feel that the information is valid or interesting, I won't just be like, well, I cut out this part where I talked about this feature of the product just because we were running long. I won't do that. That's not going to be me. And if that impacts my earnings or my views or the whatever, YouTube doesn't like it. It won't put it to the top of people's feeds. I don't even know how any of that stuff works. I don't care. I don't want to hear it. I want to know at the end of the day when I look at that video that it's the right video from me to that audience, because that's what I care about more than anything.
Exactly.
Each video
is sort of a thesis statement. It is a paper. I mean, it's a researched paper, if you want to look at it that way. I also want to make a video kind of similar to that, that research and papers and essays manifest in everything we do. You know, we shouldn't fear that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with your videos and videos on YouTube in general. You have a point, you have evidence of that point, and you present it in a finalized version with organization and clarity and reasons for, you know, your subjectivity or your opinions. And then you open the forum, hopefully, for some intelligent discussion rather than saying, oh, these card sleeves suck. Next, you know, that doesn't help anybody. And so,
no.
I guess with polarizing opinions and videos that you have, they're not very polarizing. I don't know if anyone's feelings are hurt if you say Ultra Pro isn't the best, right? But how do you deal with the negative side of that? Because inevitably through the internet, since it's so easy and safe to do it, you're going to get some negativity and mean things, mean comments. How has that been on your channel specifically?
It's not been an issue, and I know that this is the exception, but I'm glad that my viewers are the exception, or I think that the Magic community, despite it all, and you know, I was making that comment a minute ago about, you know, the badassery thing, but I think that that's false. I don't think that that's who the community is. I think that that might be who some people who maybe are on the manufacturing end of the community think we want to be, perhaps. I don't know that. So I don't want to say that. But I do know that I have never had any problem with comments. You can read most YouTube comments for most videos, and they're nasty and venomous and harsh and vulgar. I've never had that. The number of people who have called me a homophobic slur or something like that is, I can count on my left hand. I literally, honestly.
Right.
But that is unheard of for most of the dark depths of YouTube. And I've received nothing but well-behaved, thoughtful, intelligent discussion. And the worst end of that is laughable. Like, what I would point to as my most unproductive comments are laughable compared to the venomous stuff that other YouTube channels receive. I don't feel like there is, like, somebody made a comment on one of my videos a few days ago and said, like, ignore the haters, Talarian, we love what you do. And I was like, what? I don't, is there another thread somewhere about me that I'm not seeing? And people disagree with me, but when they disagree with me, they do so intelligently and validly. And it's like, yeah, fair point. One of my common comments is fair point, fair counterpoint, you know, to this. So I don't really feel that. When I first started out, there was perhaps more antagonism that I noticed on the early videos, like, I think people weren't sure what I was doing and were suspicious of my motivation. And maybe several people said, like, oh, you're hating on Ultra Pro. There were some, like, kind of, I don't want to say Ultra Pro fanboys. And I like some of what Ultra Pro has made. I'm not against any company altogether. I'm just against poor quality. But there was definitely a lot more comments early on, maybe before I had the big catalog, showing that I had a wide scope, where people were just like, oh, you're just ragging on. Specifically, they felt offended at my giving Ultra Pro a C grade in that first video. And I got a lot of, like, accusations of bias. And I said, well, I'm biased towards quality. And this brand of sleeves doesn't have it, too high at the moment, but I don't feel that I have internet hate and troll and venom directed at me in any noticeable way. I did a video. We were talking about the minority of visible women in Magic, and I did a video. It's probably my favorite, called "Teach Your Friends to Play Magic: The Gathering," and the it's my favorite. And the central character in that is a female character, and she's being portrayed as the knowledgeable Magic player. And when we filmed it, all of us, she actually is a very dear friend of mine, we were all saying, like, oh boy, like, you know, are we going to hear, like, very vulgar comments directed towards her, saying things about, like, you know, her body or this, or sexual comments? Not a one. We posted the video, and more than half the people, I would say actually everybody, didn't even make any reference to her gender at all. And the only question concerning her gender was that I used the nickname Johnny, as in the Magic slang. And people were like, isn't that not typically a girl's name? And that was it. And then other people would be like, oh, no, he means the Magic slang term. And it was like, oh, okay, I understand. And not one person said anything demeaning or sexist or that we saw in the comments, and we scoured them. And maybe there's one floating there that I missed, but considering there's, like, you know, 800 comments on that video, I was like, that's why this community is awesome, is that we were expecting bad and they shined. And that's who I think, you know, nerds are, and that's who I think Magic players are, is they are people who can shine like no other in that way. And I just never fails to impress me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never.
Absolutely. I think hinting what you said at the beginning, sort of coming from a culture of being bullied and whatnot, I think we all have a bit of scars from those kinds of things. So it's nice to see us pay it forward in the best ways and be supportive in the face of that kind of stuff. So I would agree with you that you have not faced a lot of negativity or trolls, and on the flip side, you're sort of becoming a celebrity in the Magic: The Gathering world. I would say you become sort of an icon. I mean, you want to deny it, but I mean, on the uprise of things, it's really cool to see both you and Wedge get attention from things that aren't just strictly within the YouTube, our little tiny niche inside of the Magic world. You know, it's really, really cool to see us kind of expand, and you beyond, you know, the command cast and Wedge get an official spoiler. Those are all really powerful things, and I think that does come with sort of a celebrity side to it. So my question is, have you had any celebrity kind of experiences outside, maybe walking around getting groceries or anything like that?
One person.
Wow.
And I guess the fear I have is that someone one day is going to be in one of my classes, because, you know, I'm teaching, you know, 18 to 24 year olds in college. And the reason I'm afraid of that is that I'm a real hard ass, and I would hate to have to be like, have someone be like, I'm such a fan, I love your channel. And then I'm like, this is a D, you know, later
right,
in the semester.
Right.
And it's, I don't like doing that to anyone, but I am, you know, from what you can see in my grading products, that's kind of how I great essays. I am a stickler, and I would just hate to do that, because that's got to be horrifying, someone that you know, like, enjoy and to then be very critical of your work. But as of yet, I do not believe any of my students have ever recognized me. If they have, they've kept it to themselves. And one time, walking on campus, as I was hurrying to class, I was just walking by, and someone walked by and said, hey, Tularean Community College. And I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, and that was the end of it. Was just like, love the channel. Oh, thanks so much. You know, and hi, how you doing? And this and that. And then, you know, it was nothing awkward or embarrassing or anything like that. Of course, in the card shop, luckily at my local game store, everybody, you know, knew me long before the channel, and knew me when I was starting out, just with this, I was inflicting upon them all the weekly videos, like, in their inboxes anyway. So it's not like, I feel very comfortable there, and we've had a few people come in, because I sometimes film some scenes in it, and people can figure out where I'm at and stuff through that, and some people have, but it's never been anything more than, hey, how's it going? You know, like the channel. And nothing, you know, like no horror stories, no terrible incidents. Everybody's really cool. Everybody's smart. Everybody's adults, you know?
Yeah, sure. That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. And to see you be exalted a little bit more, I mean, I'm sure there will be
exalted,
eh? Yeah. We have to have hardened scales as YouTubers, you know, to keep up the comments and all that stuff. But no, it'll be interesting to see where the next couple of years takes you in that realm. I just dream at least one of us gets some sort of attention through Wizards and onto kind of the mothership on their YouTube channel. That'd be really cool. So fingers crossed for that.
It's not going to be the guy making videos saying, don't buy this product from Wizards. I'll tell you that. Like, a lot of people are like, has Wizards reached out to you? And it's like, no, I just made 5 videos saying, don't buy this dual deck, you know, and don't buy this event deck. I don't know. Like a couple people have said to me, oh, I'm sure they're watching. I'm like, I do not believe these. I don't know. That'd be really nice because I love the company, obviously, in the game. But I'm always going to have to be like, I have to always be the guy who will say this is no good or I don't like this. And I mean, I'm so proud of Wedge for getting that spoiler card. That's such a great, it's such a great acknowledgement, you know? But I also, it's like, what about you? And it's like, well, you know, they're not going to give a spoiler card to someone who's going to have to say, oh, they just gave me some jank. This isn't going to see play in any format,
right,
you know, because
right.
I'd have to, because that's my thing is being honest and critical. You know, I mean, maybe they then intentionally try and, you know, do a good card.
Yeah, they'd give you Ugin. There's no way they would.
Yeah, I don't personally think that it's meant to be because of the nature of what I do. I don't think so. Again, I don't think directors hung out a lot with Roger Ebert. I think they all hated his guts. And that's, again, what I go back to is it's like he didn't really – that was – you know, he was in a different world than the people who actually made the movies. He might have showed up at the events from time to time, but I don't think that, like, you know, movie studios were calling Ebert up on the phone with pitches or with things like that at all. I think that it was like they were very happy when he liked what they made, but for the most part, everybody got the downside of that thumb at some point and hated his guts. And I'm not saying I think Wizards hates my guts, but I think that they're like, yeah, no, he just said, don't buy the product. Like, again, you know, and so that's my take on it. I don't know. I've never exchanged 2 words with them, so I have no knowledge of that.
Sure.
I don't know.
We'll see, I guess, in the future what happens. But yeah. But I guess for all of us listening now, we just discovered that I guess your subtype could be Rebel, if you want to bring back that tribe, right? Scholar,
yeah.
Rebel, is that a thing?
Right. Yeah, Rebel Scholar.
Yeah.
There we go.
Just wrapping up, so magic aside, like what else is going on in life? What do you like doing? What's your favorite thing right now outside of magic, which is, you know, hard pressed to say for us that are very, very involved in the game, but there has to be something.
Right now, I have no time for anything because I have a baby. I have a YouTube channel. I do play Magic. I have a wife, and I have 2 jobs in addition to all of that. Actually, I guess what's really big is board games. We've been very fortunate.
Oh, cool.
You know, when you got a little kid, you can't go out at night. I can't go down to do the midnight pre-release because I've got a baby, and my wife can't do that. We can't go out to parties or bars or even restaurants late at night. We are homebound after, you know, at the dinner hour, you know, and he goes to bed at 7-8 o'clock sort of thing. And so we are confined to the home, and we're very lucky to have a social group that said to us, we're happy to come to you. And these are people we met through playing Magic, but they've been coming over and we've gotten into board games and Dungeons and Dragons and that sort of thing. And that's really the highlight of our week is when our friends come over 1 to 2 times per week, and it's a pretty good size of 3 to 5 people, depending on people's schedules. And we pull out Lords of Waterdeep, we pull out Dominion, we pull out Dungeons and Dragons when we've got enough of the party there. Yet another game my wife is better at than me. she's on what several of the players call the A team, while I'm apparently relegated to comic relief.
I see.
Yes,
do you guys play Settlers of Catan too?
Oh, I love Settlers of Catan, although apparently everybody gangs up against me. But
Hey, it's not easy being good, so.
Well, yeah, apparently I also am very, very cutthroat in terms of my trades and maneuvers and screwing people over for resources.
I don't want your sheep. I do not want your sheep.
Yeah. So I make a target of myself, apparently, on Settlers. I don't know. But yeah, board games, tabletop gaming, that sort of thing, has been just wonderful as new parents. You know, we were into it before, but it's especially become like this is our social life is when, you know, people can come over and play with us. And I'm turning into a game store myself. One of our very dear friends does own a game store, and it's starting to be like whatever he's got on his shelf that I don't currently own, is on the list to be purchased to have a copy of at our house.
That's awesome. So the nerd culture is alive and well at House Tellaria, apparently.
Which
is the best compliment I think you could ever receive, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so for the closer of this episode, I'd like to do this just from here on out. I'm just going to simply ask you what your favorite Magic the Gathering card is ever and why.
Oh, my goodness. My favorite Magic the Gathering card ever.
Yeah, it's a big question. For someone who's coming back from so long ago.
It would be... I'm going to cheat.
Okay.
And I'm going to say...
Sounds like a Magic player right there.
Yeah, right. Hey, no, it doesn't. No, it most certainly
cheat,
does
cheat in
not.
Terms of...
I'm going to think outside the box for your question to get better value
and achieve
naming three, because my favorite card is actually the Urza Lands.
Oh, wow.
The Urza's Tower, Urza's Mine, Urza's Power Plant. And so that's my favorite thing. When I was young in high school, I loved artifacts because they could go in any deck, and it was my favorite thing, and they were very different than they are today because we didn't have equipment. We had these wild artifacts like Aladdin's Lamp, and they did these amazing things, and they were so expensive, and the Urza Lands were so special to me. You know, everybody liked the dual lands, but I liked the Urza Lands because they provided colorless mana, which all my friends said was worthless because they couldn't cast their creatures with it, but I was like, no, I can get my Aladdin's Ring out early if I get all three of them, and I absolutely loved the Urza's Lands. I loved getting them together, and I built decks specifically around them, artifact decks that were terrible decks, my Aladdin's Ring deck. Try getting that and Ring of Immortality into play at the same time. That was what I was like in high school.
Yeah, sure, yeah, I mean, putting
Ring
all
of
the pieces of the puzzle together. So, I mean, I think those lands are very telling of where you've come from Magic, and that's really, really cool, very flavorful. Too.
Always an artificer at heart. What's your favorite card?
Turn it around on you. This will be coming up very often in this podcast. Young Pyromancer, of course. Young Peasy Fasheezy will always, you know, stay in my heart. Everything about it is everything I want in a Magic card. And that was one of the first cards that I was exposed to, you know, after the first kind of deck I built was like, hey, you should look at this card. It gives you things for the things you already want to do. And I fell in love, so... Young Peasy, you are forever my favorite.
And do you see yourself as a young pyromancer?
Absolutely. I mean, I even acted as one in my little webisode series.
I remember.
That is me.
Yeah.
That is me to a heart, I think. Heart
awesome.
And soul right there.
Well, that's red. And that, by the way, is the prejudice against red just in terms of flavors. Everyone says red is the color of, like, anger and destruction. No, 'tis of emotion. Anger is the color of love. The red Phyrexians did not end up extinguishing the Murin refugees because they had what the other color Phyrexians lacked, which was empathy.
Exactly.
And sympathy and compassion. Red is the color of love in Magic the Gathering. I wish that was expressed on more cards and in more flavor, but it's true. It's not just the people who scream and destroy. It's part of it, but it is also the other side as well.
Sure, it is passionate. And you know what? This is Magic teaching us things about life. You can hear lessons from the cards. They're trying to teach you things. I promise. You just got to listen. All right, Professor, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate all of your time, all of
thanks
your answers.
Thanks so much for having
it was
me.
A great,
thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
It was a great conversation. Thank you. Wasn't that a good conversation? Just a nice balance of Magic and life. I think that was the perfect example to follow from here on out on this little show that I've discovered I really want to do. So thanks so much for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed. I guess I'm going to use this little space right now just to talk about what's going on in my life. I am very excited because a month ago I heard back from my dream school, which is the University of Texas at Austin, for graduate school. I know I look 18, but I graduated college a couple years ago with 2 degrees, one in Spanish and Italian, or sorry, Spanish and Portuguese, and the other was in Italian. So I decided to choose Italian as the language of of my passions and of my future, and I applied to grad school at UT Austin, and they offered me a full ride and stipend to come onto their program and work towards my PhD. So anybody listening out there that lives in Austin, I will be very anxious and excited to look for a new game store down in Texas, down in the oasis that is Austin. I absolutely love the city. I can't wait to get there. I was just there a couple weeks ago visiting the program. Everybody seems so, so fun. Very genuine people. That's what happens when you get to an Italian program. If anybody's interested, you should really take Italian in college if you are in college or thinking about going to college, because more often than not, the Italian professors are so loving, so homely, and so welcoming. And I have found the exact same situation down in Austin. So can't wait to be there in August. And in May, I am going to be working my summer camp job, which is my absolute favorite thing in the entire world. And until then, of course, I will be at TheMagicManSam3 on Twitter. I tweet more than anything else. I hope you guys follow me there. I will be thinking about more people, more guests to invite onto the show. I do have a couple lined up that I think you guys will very much enjoy. Please follow the Tulare Community College on YouTube as well as Twitter as well. He is a, like I said, just a wonderful guy. Very good to have somebody like him in the community. And thank you for listening. Wow. Our first official podcast. Done. Excellent. I guess that's it. Cheers, everybody.